This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Welcome to the Row One Seat One podcast. This is Ben, aka Boston Nuga. We've had a busy couple weeks here. Welcome to 2020. We've already hit up, three or four shows already in the young year, and have had seen some amazing matches. Kurt Stallion is already my wrestler of the year. I've seen him work four shows and had absolutely four bangers. I've hit up New South Wrestling in Alabama. Saw Kurt Stallion work Daniel Maccabe in a match you guys absolutely need to see. I've hit up Southern Underground Pro, and I've hit up Action Wrestling. So I guess I've hit three shows. Then I watched St. Louis Anarchy on IWTV. But one of the stars of Action Wrestling, probably the most over guy on the roster, and someone I refer to as the King of Georgia, is with us this week. We have Matt Sells, a grizzled veteran, and probably the most fun guy in the Southeast. Matt, welcome to the show.
Hey, man. Thanks for having me. Glad to get to do this.
Matt, you are a wily veteran of the scene. When did you start training?
Started the summer of 2002, actually. Managed to track down Dory Funk Jr.'s Funkin' Conservatory via old dial-up internet. finding his website, and at 15 years old, found that he would do teen camps, and so begged my mom to drive me from Northeast Georgia down to Ocala, Florida for a week-long teen camp to get my foot in the door of pro wrestling.
And you were how old at the time?
15. It was the month before my 16th birthday.
Oh, man. So you learned a spinning toehold at the age of 15 before you got exactly. out of high school. That's fantastic. So, and you're based out of Atlanta, by the way, right?
I am. Yeah. Currently out of Atlanta, or Matt Atlanta, of course, is all I have to say. So,
yeah. So your mother let you go down all the way to Florida just to learn from Dory Funk Jr. Anybody in that camp that we might know, or anybody that you traveled around with as a teenager that we might know?
The second camp that I went down there, Johnny Heartbreaker, who ended up being Romeo Roselli of the Heartthrobs. Yeah. I got to hang out with him, and he gave me kind of a crash course in wrestling etiquette and stuff. As a snot-nosed little 16-year-old kid, he helped me make sure I didn't get my ass kicked in the first few locker rooms I was in. So
That's always good. Now, did you immediately start hitting the road at the age of 16, or did your mom make you wait until high school?
By senior year of high school, I graduated. I started school a little young. I graduated when I was 17. Mm-hmm. So by my senior year of high school, it was going to school Monday through Friday, training 2 to 3 days a week, and then Friday, Saturday, and a lot of times Sunday, I was on the road wrestling.
Now, this is a question I always like to ask, just backing up a little bit. When did you fall in love with wrestling? Because, I mean, you got out of high school and immediately started wrestling. So you obviously knew at a very young age you wanted to be a wrestler. How did you know? When did you know? What was that first moment where you said, "This is for me"?
I watched a little bit of it as a kid, as a young kid, and I wasn't really into it. Like my younger brother and my grandfather were crazy into wrestling, and I was more into quote legitimate sports as well as like comic books and action movies. And then '96 for me is kind of when I really started getting into it. Growing up in the Southeast and not growing up with cable, just watching on local TBS at the time, just watching the NWO is kind of what did it for me. And then branching out of that, I would find ECW and syndication. So that really got me into it. And then when I was 15, I read Mick Foley's first book, and for some reason it didn't scar me. Instead, it made me want to do it, and that's when I started seeking out wrestling schools. So Mick Foley was a huge inspiration for me.
I can see that in your work, actually, too.
Just kind of the lovable loser.
No. Someone who connects with absolutely everyone in the audience. No, definitely. No, someone who's who's a real human being. Like, that's like you're a real person. You're a genuine three-dimensional person. I don't mean that in a derogatory way whatsoever. No, definitely. So at the fresh young age of 16, you decide to become a wrestler. Your parents, they obviously were encouraging in a way that they drove you everywhere and they let you go down to Florida, but were they skeptical? What was the reaction from your family? You telling them it's basically like, Mom, I'm going off to the army.
Pretty much. Yeah. My dad was pretty supportive. He always said I kind of got it from him. He enjoyed doing like martial arts training and stuff when he was younger. So he says that started it. He was never a huge wrestling fan. My mom grew up a wrestling fan. Her father, my grandfather, they would go to shows. My mom would always talk about getting to go see Freddie Blassie and Haystacks Calhoun live. So she was a wrestling fan. She was supportive, but I also think she thought it was kind of a phase too. After a while, she realized it wasn't. But yeah, for the first 2 years of my career, she came to every show and was sitting on the front row. And she was wonderful. Like she got it, which really made me happy because she cheered me when I was a baby face. And I was worried when I first started working heel that she'd still be out there cheering me. But one of the first shows that I worked heel, she stood up as I'm making my ring entrance. And of course, it's a small show, so there's 12 people there total, maybe. So of course, as the always good young, 17-year-old heel, I'm out there and I have to talk shit to everybody in the crowd. So I get to her and I'm worried she's going to cheer me or whatever, but she stands up, says fuck you, flips me off and spits at me. So she gets it. All right. So I had my mom to thank for the support with that. So
that's amazing. That's absolutely amazing. So where do you start? Where does a 17-year-old start working? What locker room will let a 17-year-old in, and not beat the absolute shit out of them?
I trained at NWA Wildside after Dory Funk's school, and so that was primarily where I was based out of. And Todd Sexton trained me. Rick Michaels had a small hand in training me as well. And Todd always told me, he was like, if I had realized you weren't 18, I wouldn't have trained you.
That place was a breeding ground too for some absolute just great talent.
But apparently I conducted myself old enough that he didn't realize I was only 17 when I was there. And so yeah, I was working there, and there was a couple of small groups that I worked with out of South Carolina. And then just kind of hopping in the car with some guys that would take me places and getting a pretty good education at 16, 17 years old.
So in NWA Wildside, you had Tank, you had Iceberg, you had AJ Styles, you had Jason Cross, you had just an absolute all-star game basically. And then you had guys coming in from TNA too, right?
Oh yeah, absolutely. So yeah, when I was there, 2003, 2004, yeah, so AJ was, there in TNA, so it was kind of his tail end. So David Young would be there coming in sometimes. That St. Louis crew, Daisy Hayes, Delirious, who factors into my life later, Matt Sydal, it's everybody that you can think of. It was a who's who of independent wrestling.
And did they let you work some of these guys at a young age, or were you working lower on the card?
I was definitely working lower on the card. So they would do their Saturday TVs, and then Friday they did their Friday night franchise shows, where it was kind of like their developmental. So I would work those, and Rick Michaels, we still kind of laugh about it to this day, where I would get put in the opening match most of the time on Friday nights, so I could work, run to the back, put on some street clothes real quick, and then work production lighting for the rest of the show. So a lot of times I was the only guy without any sort of entrance, anything, because I wasn't able to run my own lights. so I'd do that, and then I would work on Saturdays and started out, helping any way I could with, running spots or security, and then slowly started working lower on the card and ended up getting put in some stuff after that. But yeah, not getting to work with a whole lot of those guys. I did get to work with Rain Man some on the Friday shows, which was really cool. Corey Chavis, Dark City Fight Club. Mm-hmm. So he was always very good to me.
Well, that's a good lesson, because I got a fair amount of wrestlers actually listen to this show. You're talking about, you're doing production, you're doing lighting, you're I'm sure you're helping to set up the ring. I'm sure you're helping with tickets and stuff like that. What value as a young wrestler did it have to you to learn all the aspects of the business?
I mean, it makes you useful in anything you can do, and it keeps you humble. And then kind of realizing every step that you go, you start over. Because I did that for the first few years of my career at Wildside. And then when I moved up and trained out of the Ring of Honor dojo and went on the road with them, it was the same thing. I was there on ring crew and working production. And it makes you a valuable aspect. And it makes you more appreciative of when you are in the ring of the guys that make you look like a superstar. Because without, you know, guys running production, without the camera guys, without the referees, without commentators, without all those people and all those aspects, that, you know, wrestling doesn't work. So it just makes you really appreciative of how smooth and well-oiled the system really is.
So you're 2003, 2004, 2005, you're working Wildside. Do you start to branch out at a certain point, or you feel like you're in a really good place, you're a young wrestler, you're learning? At what point do you really start to feel like, hey, I'm starting to get this? Or do you ever start to feel like, hey, I'm starting to get this?
At that point, I thought I knew.
Yeah, sure.
One of the things I always tell people is, you know, people are always like, oh, I'm so jealous. I wish I had started that young. I kind of wish I hadn't started that young. It's hard to tell a, you know, 16, 17-year-old that they're wrong, because they're right about everything and every aspect of life, even professional wrestling. So, of course, 17 to 18 years old, I thought I was fantastic. I thought I was the best pro wrestler there is. And so I kind of had a chip on my shoulder and had an attitude. And going back, if I watch any of the matches now from then, I was not very good. But, I mean, I was branching out. I was working a lot all over Georgia, some in South Carolina, some in North Carolina, some Alabama. But yeah, I mean, just kind of, you know, staying in the Southeast. I was at 18, was in college, going to University of Georgia. So staying busy with that and working 35 hours a week and then wrestling every weekend. So, you know, just kind of trying to live the college life on top of being a pro wrestler.
Now, you're at UGA. Who was playing at UGA when you were there?
Oh, God. Who was on the team when I was there?
Were they good when you were there?
Oh, they were really good. Okay. When I was there. Yeah, that they weren't the caliber of the team that they are now, but mm-hmm. You know, that was the Mark Richt years. So, gotcha. But yeah, they were solid when I was there.
Gotcha. Yeah, because I know you're a football guy.
Oh yes.
Yeah. Well, and we'll talk about that later, definitely.
Yeah, like, so yeah, Matt Stafford was the quarterback, I think, for the first 2 years.
Oh, so you had no Sean Moreno too, right?
Yeah. Yep.
Oh, that team was filthy. That team was absolutely filthy.
And the thing is like, huge college football fan, huge football fan in general, but I didn't go to a single game when I was in school there, because you could get the student tickets for like $6 a pop as a student and then resell them for like $100 each. So,
oh, nice. That's a profit.
So I was like, yeah, I was like, I'd rather eat and pay rent than go to a game. So that worked out well for me.
See, when I was down in Florida, like, no, I just go. It's just like, no, I'd much rather go to the game. Like, I don't care. I'll just fork it over. It's fine.
You know, right. Like, I'll starve during the week. If I can
starve. It's fine. It's fine. I get so few opportunities. There's only six of these a year, you know?
Like, you got to live your life. Yeah.
Yeah,
exactly. I always tell people now I'm living my 30s the way I should have lived my 20s. See, that's kind of how I am now. I'm like, when I should be a responsible adult, I'm not. So
so my question really, too, is about your character, because obviously you have a full fleshed out character now. And what did you have a character back then, or was it just like, Matt Sells the Kid?
That was pretty much it for a while. It was just kind of Matt Sells the Kid. For a couple of shows at Wildside, I'm really glad this one didn't stick. I was growing my hair out because, you know, Dory Funk actually told me, it's like, you know, work out, get a tan, grow your hair out. You got something. So, okay, well, if Dory Funk tells me to do it, I'm going to do it. So I started growing my hair out, and as my hair was growing out, it was naturally growing out as this big poofy mullet. So Rick Michaels is like, that's it. That's your name. He's like, everybody calls you Mullet. He's like, you're the Mullet Matt Sells. And so for like four shows, I was introduced as the Mullet Matt Sells. And that was when that TV show on UPN that used to come on like after SmackDown, The Mullets, that lasted like six episodes, was on. And so he started like brainstorming ideas of like gear that could have the mullet on it and stuff. And luckily that didn't stick. I had thought of Sex Sells in the back of my head for a while, but the first person to actually use it was Dan the Dragon Wilson, or Reverend Dan Wilson, worked the Indies all over Georgia. Was working a show in Rome, Georgia, in AWA one night in 2004, 2005. And he was like, let's, you know, you're going to come out with somebody who's doing a rock star character. He's like, you'll be his roadie. And he's like, you'll be Sexton Sells. And he's like, maybe not. He was like, maybe Todd Sexton wouldn't like that. And I'm like, yeah, he trained me. Let's not do that. And he goes, how about Matt Sex Sells? I'm like, perfect. And so I tried to get people to run with that for a while, and finally it started sticking places.
And then stuck with you 17 years, so obviously it's worked.
And then the rock and roll model started maybe 2012, started running with that, and the Boozer Weight's been kind of the last few years. So it's been different incarnations of basically the same character, for about 15 years, just changing the main essence of it.
And it's close to you as a person, too. You know, you like to drink, you like to party, you know, you like to go and have fun, right?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. I guess especially the character as a baby face. As a heel, I'm a little bit more of a shithead than I am in real life. But as a baby face, it's a huge extension of me. I just, I'd rather just, drink and have a good time and listen to music and fuck around. So, it's an easy character to play when you're playing yourself every night.
So if you're a young wrestler listening to this, as far as picking a character, what would the advice be?
Let it happen organically. For the longest time, I tried to force stuff. I was like, okay, what can I be? What can I do? Think of stuff that interests you and go from there. Think outside of wrestling. So many people in the business get so bogged down in just tunnel vision with pro wrestling. Think of stuff you enjoy outside of it. If you enjoy video games or sports or music or whatever, start grabbing aspects of things outside of the pro wrestling business and add it to your character.
Now, you talk about sort of things outside of wrestling. You are a huge sports fan, and you're a huge music fan. I guess we'll get to that stuff now. You refer to yourself as the rock and roll model, but you have been to, a million concerts just as long as I've known you, and probably a million more before I knew you. What are some of your top concerts you've been to, your favorite shows you've been to?
Oh, I mean, Motley Crue is my all-time favorite band. Mm-hmm. So anytime I've seen them, so
it's the best show I've ever seen too.
Already snagged up tickets for the tour this summer.
Godspeed.
So any of their shows are always great. Always go with a couple of friends. We get fully glammed up, dress up, makeup, big hair, everything. It's fun. So it's a whole experience with that. They're always fantastic live. I saw Metallica on the Death Magnetic tour. That was fantastic when they were doing the full circle stage, playing in the center of the arena. It was them, and then Gojira and Lamb of God opened for them. So that was amazing. Steel Panther always puts on a good show because it's a variety hour. It's comedy and music and everything you could possibly want. There's so many good shows I've seen. Saw U2 back in 2005. Of course, nice. It's friggin' U2. No matter what genre of music you like, U2's freaking great. So I love going to concerts. I love the concert experience. Slipknot live is great. Just you seeing nine guys on the stage just beating the shit out of instruments. you name it. I don't think I've ever really seen that many bad shows. I try to be selective with the shows I go to. So
what's one band you wouldn't expect that's crazy good live that like people like should see that like don't really think of?
For my style of music, I saw Muse when they were fairly new. Yeah, like it's not really I lean more towards metal and hard rock and even like kind of mainstream rock as well. But I saw them 2005. They were playing at like this holiday festival thing where Velvet Revolver was the main act. But Muse was amazing live, and apparently they're even better now. But just the light show and they were fantastic. Kid Rock is another one that I saw live that I wouldn't normally go, oh, you got to see Kid Rock. Mm-hmm. But he was fantastic. Played every instrument, was that constant showman. I won second row tickets to that Kid Rock show by winning a punt, pass, and kick competition for a radio contest.
Kid Rock for free. See, I would go to Kid Rock for free. I don't know if I would pay for Kid Rock.
Yeah, I mean, I wasn't exactly wanting to go, ooh, let's go see Kid Rock. But they were the morning station in Athens, Georgia at the time. I was driving into to school. It was like my sophomore year of college. And they're like, we're at the intramural fields at UGA. And I'm like, I parked my car over there. And they're like, we're out here doing a pump, pass, and kick competition for concert tickets. Like, well, I'm running early for class. I'm going to stop you had to beat one of their interns in one of the three things, and he outpassed me and he outkicked me, but he shanked his punt, and then I had like a 35 yarder end over end perfect. I'm like, all right, perfect, got me some Kid Rock tickets.
So are you a secret punter, and like were you like some secret athlete? Like, the I mean, obviously you're a wrestler, so you're a good athlete, but like, were you like some crazy good athlete in high school?
No, God, no. I wish. I was a baseball player, and that was about it. And I wasn't even good at baseball, so I wasn't good at like the laziest sport there is. I was a solid singles hitter. I was fat and slow, and, so that's great when you're a singles hitter. You're fat and slow and can't catch a ball. So yeah, so
the Ichiro without being Ichiro.
So, I mean, I loved sports, and I loved watching sports. I loved playing sports. I sucked at them.
and you're a huge Braves fan, right? Do you have season tickets?
No, I wish.
I hang out with Al all the time, so I'm just like, and you're like every game, so I just assumed you had season tickets.
Yeah, Al had season tickets last year, the last 2 years. He's not renewing this year, so I'm upset. So I would go with him, and then when I wouldn't go with him, I would just snag up cheap seats. I really started debating buying season tickets this year. I'm still kind of thinking about it.
Talk to people who have not been to that stadium about that stadium, because I actually have yet to go. It always slips my mind. Actually, I got my mom tickets this year to Red Sox Braves, like for Christmas. That's her great Christmas present. Yeah, because I mean, you know, I'm from Boston, so like I gotta see my Sox. But like, tell people about that stadium who have yet to go. Give us the hard sell.
It's basically they've manufactured their own Wrigleyville. So you've got a bunch of bars and restaurants and stuff right outside the stadium. So you can make a whole day of it. So you can go. My favorite thing to do is go show up early, you know, get cheaper drinks outside, get a little bit of food outside. That they'll have, you know, live bands playing outside and stuff sometimes, and just, you know, get feeling a little mellowed out, and then head into the stadium. There's not a bad seat in the house for that stadium. It's cool. A little bit smaller than Turner Field. So like you can sit upper deck and still thoroughly enjoy the game.
Nice.
It's kind of got a mixture of a bunch of different nice baseball stadiums all mixed into one. I love it. It's the traffic's not as bad as they thought it was going to be initially. It's not in the middle of downtown, which I think is great. And there's a bunch of stuff to do around in the Battery as well. So it's a fun time.
See, that's what scared me off, because I figured the traffic would be a disaster. But yeah, if you're telling me it's not as bad as you think, then that's good.
I mean, anytime around a large thing, you know, large gathering like that, it's going to be a little bad, but it's not nearly as bad as everybody thought it was going to be.
Have you been to a bunch of other stadiums too?
Let's see. I've been there. Any stadium they've ever had in Atlanta, I've been to. I've been to Citizens Bank in Philly, Citi Field in New York, Wrigley Field, which was amazing. And I think that's it as far as baseball stadiums.
And give us the Wrigley, your experience at Wrigley.
Oh, Wrigley was fantastic. We just by chance were on a Ring of Honor tour and had a Saturday off. It was on the War of the Worlds tour where New Japan would come over. So me and a couple of guys got right field bleacher seats for Washington Nationals versus Chicago. And so we sat out in the right field bleachers and got to have the full experience, and the Cubs won, so he got to sing the victory song and everything. So it was great. It was everything you'd want a Wrigley experience to be.
That's fantastic. So you mentioned Ring of Honor. You worked the Southern Indies for a while. What point? Any other highlights before you went to Ring of Honor?
I'm sure there are. Yeah. I always tell people, you know, I drink and I get hit in the head a lot. So I'm sure there's a ton that I'll probably think of at some point. But, you know, getting to work. Getting to work a plethora of guys who would teach me good stuff, you know, whether it's Chris Hamrick or Ron Simmons or, you know, guys that, you know, you get in the ring with that, you know, I've forgotten more about wrestling than I'll ever remember.
Tell us about Ron Simmons, because that sounds amazing.
Ron was great. I worked Ron in a tag match. It was TNT Pro Wrestling in Clayton, Georgia. And he was great, because I working a tag, it's like, all right, so when you're putting heat on me, and I'm like, there's no way I'm putting heat on Ron Simmons. And he's like, yeah, you put a little heat on me. And I tried to talk him into giving me the Dominator, and he said he just had hip surgery, so he'd kill us both if he tried to give me the Dominator. Gave me the Spine Buster, though, stiffest Spine Buster I've ever felt in my entire life. Everything else was as light as could be. Like when we locked up, he backed me to the corner, threw a punch, and it took me half a second to sell it, because I'm like, oh God, Ron Simmons is going to kill me. I was like, oh, that was really light. And before we go out, he's like looking at me, he goes, what time's the show going to end? I go, brother, we're not getting out of here until like 11:30. I was like, we'll walk through that curtain at 11:30 after the main event. Man, you fucking with me. I'm like, no, I'm not. So we get to the back. I'm like, Ron, look at your watch. So exactly 11:30. He goes, guess you weren't fucking with me. Because, yeah, I would totally have the balls to fuck with Ron Simmons, you know?
Yeah. Not someone to trifle with. That dude was like, what, like All-American, like ranked in the Heisman Trophy. Yeah, no, I'm going to tell him exactly what he wants to hear.
Yeah, I'll be as nice as possible to you, Ron. Don't worry.
What were some places, I mean, because I'm sure working the Southern Indies and stuff like that, you've worked some absolute, worked in front of single and double-digit crowds and worked some absolute dog shit shows. What are some of those highlights of just, like, disaster shows?
Oh, God. I mean, I've worked fairs. I've actually the shittiest like weekend I've had wasn't in the South, and it wasn't that long ago. This was like maybe four or five years ago in the Northeast. I worked a show in West Virginia on a Friday night, and then I worked in South Jersey on a Saturday night, and the combined attendance for those two shows I worked was 8 people.
Oh God.
I worked in front of 8 people in one weekend.
Oh my God.
I worked a show in Northeast Georgia one night. It was 2 days before Christmas that literally not a single fan showed up.
Ooh.
So like we didn't run a show. Me and another worker, we went out there and just kind of rolled around the ring for 2 hours just to mess around, to actually make the trip worth it. So yeah, I mean, there's been plenty of those. I worked a show in Franklin, North Carolina one time that was a combination pro wrestling. And then before that, the undercard was kids MMA. Kids unlicensed MMA, oh, just man. Like these like 10-year-olds beating the shit out of each other. It's amazing. So yeah, so that's just a few of the highlights.
That's amazing. So yeah, you've worked in like, I mean, single digit crowds. Like, I mean, is that demoralizing or does it just become funny?
It used to bother me, like, when, you know, I was really green and just breaking in, you know, you want to treat everything like it's WrestleMania and you think every match is the biggest match of your career. Now, like, I have fun with it if I work in front of a small crowd, because it's not their fault. Like, some of the best advice I've ever heard came from Ray Lloyd, Glacier. Mm-hmm. He's like, don't take it out on the people that showed up. He's like, they're the ones that actually came. He's like, still give them a good show. It's like, you know, punish the people that didn't come. Put on a good show and they'll hear that that's what they missed. So I still try to give people a really good show because they came and they forked out their hard-earned money to watch me perform. So why do I want to half-ass it? I mean, I'll have fun with it. Like, I worked a show just maybe 6 months ago that I was joking around because the crowd was so small. So I kept, you know, mimicking like I was looking into the rafters like it was WrestleMania. And the crowd got behind it. They were laughing. So, I mean, you know, we had a good time. It's, you know, they were in on the joke. So it's fun.
So at a certain point, what year did you decide, you know, I'm going to really make a go of this and go up to Ring of Honor?
In 2000, always, this is funny, I always remember the year I got married because it was the first Ring of Honor camp I went to. in 2011, I went up to a Ring of Honor camp. They would periodically do the tryout camps. Yep. So I went up there to the first camp. I was the drizzling shits. But I thought I was awesome. I was 10 years in and kind of, you know, big fish, small pond, I thought. I know a lot. I'm going to go up there. And I went to this camp, and at this camp, in this particular camp, there was Warbeard Hansen, who's Ivar on
he's on WWE television.
WWE. Hangman Adam Page, oh, Matt Taven, QT Marshall. God, who else was there? Vinny Marcellus, who's in Ring of Honor. Yeah. Like, literally, like, 8 guys that end up signed. We're at this first camp, and I'm just like the drizzling shits. So I almost quit wrestling that night and talked to my wife on the phone, and she's like, "No, you're good. Just go do what you do best." And so I continued going back up to more camps. Every time they'd run a camp, I'd go back up, and I blew out my ACL, and that was fun at a Dragon Gate USA tryout. Ooh. And then kept going back up to more Ring of Honor camps and built up a really good rapport with Kevin Kelly and with Steve Corino that were always champions in my corner, and talked to them. I was like, hey, you know, what would do you think if I would pack up my shit and move to Philly? And they were like, there's only one way to find out. Like, you know, if not, you know, do it or don't. And so luckily my wife is like, you know, there's nothing that's holding us here. If you want to move up to Philly, we can move up to Philly. So we packed our shit up, moved up to Philly, and started training out of the Ring of Honor dojo in 2014, maybe, I think. Yeah.
What, I mean, first of all, had you ever lived out of the South before?
No, I was Georgia born and bred, lived all around Northeast Georgia and all around Atlanta, but had never moved anywhere else. Never moved anywhere that cold, definitely.
I would say it's a wee bit different, isn't it?
Yeah, like, and I was a moron the whole time we were up there. Like, I never bought, like, any sort of heavier winter clothes. I would just layer. So I remember I got up one morning for work and it was legitimately 0 degrees Fahrenheit. And I threw on the same clothes I would have thrown on if it was 40. So,
yeah, we drove back home for Christmas and when we left, it was like 65. And when we pulled into Hershey, Pennsylvania, the wind chill was -20.
Yeah, it's insane.
And I'm just like, what the fuck am I doing here?
Like, and I can't imagine being in New England. Like, oh, yeah.
Ugh. It was gross. It was absolutely gross. I'm just like, how do people live in this? Like, how do human beings survive? Like, and I grew up there. I'm just like, there's no way. There's no way it's I'm going back. Yeah. So like, and you survived what 5 years there? Like, just
yeah,
no, yeah, yeah, no, no, thank you, no, thank you. So you took it. You bet on yourself, basically.
Yep. Yeah. I figured. Why not? You know, fuck it. You're gonna regret it if you don't. So you might as well go up there and figure it out.
So who's in camp with you? What is the camp like? I want all the details. Like, what is a Ring of Honor camp like?
So I mean, the initial camps. Every time you'd go up there, like they had like a whole panel of coaches and judges. Mm-hmm. So it would be a lot of times the Briscoes and sometimes Jimmy Jacobs, BJ Whitmer, Jay Lethal, Delirious, who was the head trainer at the school. And guys like that. And so you go, Kevin Kelly, Brutal Bob Evans. And so you'd go up there and you'd cut promos and you'd work training matches and you'd do drills and get feedback. And so I'd always get good feedback and they'd tell me stuff to work on and I'd work on that stuff and come back to another camp and they'd tell me other stuff to work on. And that's when I eventually decided to move up there. And then so the training was great.
The training school, Yeah,
the training school was great because Delirious was the head coach. After a while, after I'd been up there, Cheeseburger and Will Ferrara became the assistant coaches. They were fantastic as well. Cheeseburger, anybody that sees him on TV really doesn't get a good understanding of how damn good that guy is.
Really?
He's fantastic. He's just like a wrestling sponge. You can see something once and know how to do it. So the drills were always good. And it got me out of a comfort zone, which was really nice because anybody that sees me work sees that, you know, I do more of a lot of the Memphis Southern stuff. And so to kind of go up there and work a Japanese influence and a more of a Northeast influence and, you know, learning how to work that style, it just made me more of a well-rounded wrestler. And how to incorporate the stuff that I do well into that style was always fun.
Because you're up there during the Adam Cole years, you're up there, the Jay Briscoe's, you know, the champ during those years, you're up there, I think, God, that was when, I think, Elgin's having his run.
Yep.
You're up there when all the Japanese guys are touring through. I mean, you're up there in a pretty good era of Ring of Honor.
Yeah, I mean, I had so many people I could talk to and get feedback from. Like, I remember I worked a dark match one night, and the first person to greet me back through the curtain was Jay Briscoe, who was the world champion at the time, to give me feedback.
Did like, you understand he didn't, what he was saying?
Jay was always easier to understand than Mark.
Mark needs subtitles, dude.
I love both those guys, and they were always a big help. And I just remember thinking, I'm like, you know, Jay Briscoe's the world champion. Like, he doesn't have to sit there and watch my match, but he did, and gave me feedback. And just, same thing with like Jay Lethal. Jay Lethal would always go out of his way to give me feedback. So
that dude is so underrated, by the way.
Dude, he is fantastic. He's probably one of the best wrestlers in the world. It's insane.
And he's just a lifer there.
Oh, yeah.
He's just, I mean, and he can do any style. He has character. He has, I mean, he's three-dimensional. I mean, he can do anything. You know, he's just so good. He's just absolutely so good. And
yeah, he gets it.
People sleep on him all the time, man. So you're in the camp for a while, and You're hustling, and at what point, I mean, what sort of feedback are they giving you, and you stick with it?
When I first moved up there, I was getting, work on this, work on this, work on this. And then, so I was getting better and getting some opportunities in wrestling, wrestling some on house shows and dark matches and doing some TV spots and having a lot of fun with that. And then one night in training, I managed to over rotate on a monkey flip and landed on my feet and shattered my left ankle.
Oh,
yeah, it was a lot of fun. I look down and see my foot is basically hanging off my leg. And I guess in a state of shock, I was kind of fine. I sat up and looked at everybody and was like, hey, can somebody help me out of the ring? And can somebody give me my phone so I can call my wife? And would somebody mind driving me to the hospital? So we got to the hospital and I'm so calm. They don't think it's that big of a deal. They cart me in and they finally see what my foot looks like. And the nurse walks in. She goes, oh my God. She's like, I'll get you some morphine immediately. So, much appreciated.
Thank you for the drugs.
The Braves were playing the Phillies that night. Cause I remember watching the end of the Braves Phillies game as my foot's hanging off my leg in the hospital. And so like they put me under and reset the leg. And I went to, the first doctor I went to, she was like, I'm not doing the surgery. She's like, I don't think you're going to walk again, much less wrestle.
Oh Jesus.
So that was fun to hear. She's like, we're going to send you to one of the best trauma specialists in the Philly area. We're going to treat it like you were in a bad car wreck. This isn't a sports injury. We're going to treat, like this is trauma. And so I went and saw him. And he's like, yeah. He's like, you managed to really mess up your ankle. He goes, this is equivalent if you jumped out of a third floor window and landed on your foot.
God.
Yeah. So he did the surgery. I was on crutches for 4 months, non-weight bearing for 4 months. Finally got back in the ring 7 months later.
Wow!
And got back at it. And that's really when I started crafting the current character, the strut that I do that everybody laughs about before every match. I actually started doing that to cover the fact that I was still limping when I came back. I didn't want anybody to know I was limping and that I was still hurt. So I started strutting. And so it covered that up. And so I've stuck with that. So I got back in the ring and was still getting good feedback. And everybody was telling me, oh, just keep doing what you're doing. Just keep doing what you're doing. All you're unlike anything we have on TV. And you can only hear that so much before you start getting a little frustrated. You're like, okay, why am I not getting used more? And so that's when I eventually sat down and talked to Delirious. And was like, hey, what can we do for me? And they pitched me being the backstage interviewer, and that's when I got that spot for a while.
So what sort of mindset change do you have to make from being a wrestler to being an on-air personality?
It was difficult to kind of want to be a supporting cast, going, okay, I'm not here to put myself over. I'm here to put other people over, was the main thing. And just kind of having an understanding of a TV product and of a wrestling product. I always tell people, like if I'm helping train new guys and they're like, oh, well, I normally work babyface. I don't know how to work heel or vice versa. I go, well, what would you want out of a heel if you're the babyface? And so that's kind of how I approached it. I'm like, okay, what would I want out of the backstage interviewer if I'm the wrestler? So I would do that. And it worked out pretty well. And it initially they had people helping me produce segments and stuff, and it was getting used some to eventually just became me producing my own segments, writing my own stuff, having to chase everybody down for my own interviews and stuff. So it was frustrating at times. In the back of my head, I was like, this is not long-term for me. I don't want this to be long-term. So I was like, I'll give myself 6 months and see where it goes from there. And 7 months later, I was like, I don't think this is going to work out.
Sure. So basically you just kind of hit a wall.
Yeah, I hit a wall. There was some stuff it had always been a 4-year plan for me to sure. move up there and, in an ideal world, move up there and become a big star and whatever happens. And so we'd been living up there for 5 years at this point, and some stuff was like, okay, it might be time for us to move back down south and give it a go back down there.
So do you, I just to be personal, do you regret it, or do you feel like would you do it again?
It molded me into the performer I am now.
Sure.
I put it out there a lot. It's sort of half joking, and I'll shit on the experience a lot and say I'm salty and bitter, but I learned a lot. Like, I learned a lot training there that I wouldn't have learned anywhere else. It really made me, like I said, it really turned me into the performer I am now. So, no, I don't regret it, as frustrating as it is at times, looking back and seeing how miserable I was at times. But no, I would probably do it over again just because it's put me in the place where I am now. And I'm really happy with my wrestling career right now, which I can't always say that I was. I definitely wasn't a lot of the time that I was up there.
Yeah, so I've met you in the last, year and a half or so. When you come to Action, you come to Georgia. So you came back to Georgia in, 2018?
Yep.
And you immediately started working Action. And you are the most over guy on the roster for the children. You have children chanting Miller Lite at you, like small
which is
children
insane. Yeah.
Chanting Miller Lite at you. Describe your character a little bit. And maybe capture a little bit of why you think you're so over.
The reason that really, especially last year in 2019, and I started doing it more in 2018, but 2019, I really stuck to my guns of what I thought the essence of my character was everywhere that I worked and would argue some with promoters and bookers about how I wanted to be presented. And so I think the reason it really works is it's a character everybody can connect with. I think everybody at the end of the day connects with somebody who tries their hardest, who just wants to have a good time, and sometimes stuff just doesn't work out for them. You know, like I haven't won a match in 400 plus days. And so I think people can connect with that. Like, this guy's busting his ass and he's still having a good time and he's not getting frustrated about it. You know, tomorrow's a new day. So I think that's what really connects. Now, on the surface, it's a fun character. Like, I'm a larger than life rock star. You know, I wear bright colors and shiny jackets and I have a good time. I don't take myself too seriously. I don't take anything too seriously. So who doesn't want to do that? You know, I like entertainment as escapism. So I like to think if I was sitting in the crowd and I watched Matt Sex Sales Enter, like, I forget about my problems for 10 minutes, you know, and get to enjoy it. So I think that's the reason the character's really worked now. And it's I'm having a lot of fun with it. I think that translates too. Like, I'm not playing a character. People see that I'm genuinely having fun, so they're having fun.
Yeah, you are fun personified, honestly and truly. Like, it's a certified hoot when you come out, and
happened organically too, which is the fun part. Like, so much of what I'm doing in wrestling now started out as me poking fun at wrestling. Me doing that crazy entrance was me. I started out initially making fun of people on the indies who have to have 10-minute long entrances.
Yeah.
And now everywhere tells me I have to do it.
And the best part is you get winded when you do your entrance. That destroys me.
I work so much harder during my entrance than I do during a match. And that's not saying I don't work hard during the match. It's insane to run up and down bleachers and to go all over an arena.
Yeah, it absolutely kills me. It's amazing. It's absolutely amazing. And you come up to Motley Crue and you're just like up in the bleachers and throwing your hands up and fans are making signs for you now. And it's just like, it's fantastic. And kids are chasing you like the Pied Piper.
The music will hit and they'll come all gather around the entrance and just follow me around, like follow me to the promised land. It's insane. And it all happened organically was the cool thing. It hasn't been forced.
I think a big part of it too, your in-ring work, there are one or two or three spots in every single match where people buy it. People think that they might actually be witnessing the time when you win. And that's a testament to your work because, like, and I buy it, hook, line, sinker. I think this might be the time where he's going to win because you have the false finishes where, oh my God, because I don't know what your finisher is, frankly. So I'm not sure that you do.
I was going to say, at this point, I'm not sure if I have one.
No. so you have your work backs it up enough where fans actually can suspend disbelief enough that, oh no, it's another Matt Sells job. It's you actually have competitive enough matches where, oh, he almost won. I can't wait to see him win next time.
Yeah, and like it people want to buy into stuff and people want to be able to say I was there when this happened, you know? That's the reason we love sports, you know. I want to be there when the Braves finally win another World Series if that ever happens. but you know, it's you can connect with that, and you connect with that as a person and as a lover of sports or entertainment or anything. Yeah. It's not that he's a bad wrestler. It's that he's just had a bad string of luck for so long. You know, at the end of the day, he's still a professional wrestler. It's just, all right, sometimes, you know, bad stuff happens, but eventually he's going to finally get that win. I want to be a part of it.
Yeah, and that's – what that led to this year was, even though you went 0-1,
For last year, 0-70-1. There was one draw in there. But yeah.
You went 0-70-1. You were named Georgia Wrestling History Performer of the Year. What did that mean to you?
It's funny. Like I need to go back and listen to it when they did the podcast. Yeah. And they named the awards. I know I came off as an asshole a little bit, but it was. I don't need the validation of that award, and that's what I've told people. The validation that I get, you've described already. It was the validation of the reason I'm in the position I am now is because the fans have put me there. They've connected with the character that I know what I'm doing, so therefore they've responded accordingly. But it's the icing on the cake that to know that I've done things the way I've wanted to do, and the fans have responded to that, and now my peers say that, you know, I'm the performer of the year in the whole state. Like, yeah, I mean, that's pretty cool.
And I mean, where else are you wrestling? I see you in action, but what other places are you wrestling as well?
I mean, basically anywhere that will book me. I'm at Southern Fried Wrestling this upcoming weekend. Mm-hmm. Action as always. I'll be at SCI this year, or the Syndic City Rumble this year. I work Pro Wrestling Bushido a lot down in Augusta. GPW and Canton, you name it. Like anywhere that I can get work, I'm there.
That's great. So from here, I know you have a big match coming up in Action against Eric Royal. You are putting your hair on the line, your beloved mullet. Do we call it a mullet? What do we call it?
I don't think it's a mullet anymore. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I hope it's not a mullet
just
anymore.
Flowing locks. Really, flowing
yeah,
locks.
Just long, flowing, golden locks. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It's a beautiful mane, frankly. You there?
I am.
Yeah, okay, yeah. It's a beautiful mane, and you're putting it up on the line against Eric Royal, and if you win, you get $2,500.
I mean, think of all the beer you can buy with $2,500, you know? It's Miller Lights, you know, if you buy a case, will come out to like 85 cents a can, so that's a lot of beer.
It's a lot of beer, yeah. And I remember in the state of Florida when I was going to school, Natty Light was actually cheaper than water. Like Poland Spring was actually like more expensive than Natty Light. Miller Lite's probably around that as well.
Oh, same. Yeah. Or like being up in Pennsylvania, yeah, Yingling. You could buy Yinglings for next to nothing up there, yeah.
I don't know how it is in the city of Atlanta, but because Atlanta probably has that, you know, Atlanta tax. But yeah.
Right.
You'll probably make up pretty well. Yeah.
Yeah, I think it'll be okay. Yeah.
And you said you were gonna share the money with the fans too.
Oh yeah, I mean everybody's gonna come party with the rock and roll model after I beat Eric Royal, keep my hair and get $2,500 richer.
Amazing, absolutely amazing. And then this last pass Action, you reffed in an interesting attire, which I put a picture up of, and you were bending over in front of me, and I was yelling at you to walk on the other side of the ring because it was just was seeing a little too much of Matt Sells, but you seem pretty ready for the match.
I am, man. It's going to be the biggest match of this year, I would assume, because yeah, I don't want to cut my hair. I've had this long hair for a long time, and I don't think I'd look good bald. So I will do everything in my power to make sure it stays with me.
What other bookings do you have coming up that are that you can talk about?
I'm at Georgia Premier Wrestling this Friday night in Canton, Georgia. I'm at Southern Fried Championship Wrestling this Saturday night in Monroe, Georgia. That's a big one. That's me versus Kyle Matthews.
Oh, nice.
So I'm in there with a technician. So people may get to see me do a little bit more wrestling than they're accustomed to seeing. So
you shocked everyone.
Right? Yeah. Like, yeah, not just Jeff swiveling my hips. So, and then, of course, Action on the 7th, Scenic City Rumble on the 8th. Southern Fried again in middle February, March 7th, Livewire Championship Wrestling and Pro Wrestling Bushido, both in Augusta. And then you can always find my schedule. I post it periodically on my social media, Twitter and Instagram, at All Sells Final, ALLSELLSFINAL. And of course, every Thursday across all social media platforms, my web series, it'd be 3 years next month. Geez. It's Never Sunny in Matlanta, where I play a caricature of myself, an alcoholic jobber that tends to have a string of bad luck, which has been the catalyst for a lot of the character stuff I do now in ring. So
it's a huge stretch.
Always check that out. Yeah.
I love the series. I love it. It's an absolute blast. but it's a huge stretch for you. You're a method actor, really.
Oh yeah, big time. Yeah.
No, but you've had some cool cameos on Always Sunny in Never Sunny in Atlanta.
Yeah, like it's always been nice that I've been able to connect with people that don't mind doing it. You know, if anybody from Adam Cole to Mark Briscoe to Joey Ryan to Keith Lee to there's tons of people, and everybody's always been really cool about it. Like, hey man, you mind filming something real quick? Scott Steiner was one of the greatest last year. he was fantastic. It was like, hey, let's sit down and watch it and make sure you don't want to refilm it. Like, I'm not going to ask Scott Steiner to do anything again.
Did you go to his Shoney's to get it, or did you?
I wish. No, I was on a show with him, and like he was in his own like private locker room on the show, and I knew the booker, and I was like, hey, do you think Scott would mind filming something with me? He's like, well, let's go see. And so I walked up to Scott, like, hey man, like I filmed this web series, like, would you mind filming it? He's like, yeah, what you got? And I pitched it to him. He's like, yeah, it's funny, let's do it.
So that's amazing. It's amazing. Yeah, Scott was really cool to us when we went to, me and Dylan and Scott Hensley went to the Shoney's, and he was really cool to us. He's actually like a way cooler guy than people give him credit for.
Oh, he's so chill. Like anytime I've been around him, he's just completely calm.
So give us those handles again one more time before we sign off.
So All Sells Final, AllSellsFinal. That's my Instagram and Twitter. You can search The Rock and Roll Model, Matt Sex Sells on Facebook. YouTube.com/ Matt Sex Sells. Find It's Never Sunny in Atlanta, plus plenty of match videos, all that good stuff.
Fantastic, fantastic. Matt, thank you so much for coming on.
Awesome. Thanks for having me, Ben.
On the Place to Be Nation wrestling feed, in episode 540 of the Place to Be podcast, JT and Scott are joined by John DeMatta to reminisce about WrestleMania 6. On New Wrestling Warzone, JT and Chad dive into WCW Monday Nitro from 2/5/96. The Special Relations are back to discuss their GWE Top 100 list in episode 3. On BTBN Extreme Three-Way Dance, JT, John, and Jenny continue their ECW adventure with three episodes of Hardcore TV from August 94, including The Birth of Extreme. On episode 31 of Row 1, Seat 1, me and Dylan Hales counted down our top 10 indie wrestlers of 2019. On Jenny and the Gems number 4, and Jenny, Matt, and Scott and Drew are back with WCW's All-Nighter 95. You Don't Know Billy Jack 11 finds Drew and Jordan watching Legendary 94 showdown between Misawa and Kawada. Be sure to check out the BTBN Pop feed, littered with great content offering tremendous shows like the Hard Traveling Fanboys, the Glenn Butler Podcast Hour, Spectacular, The Year in Pop, Laughing Theater, DC4U, Marvel Age, the Brother Sister Rewatch Podcast, and so much more. Subscribe today. And while you're at it, subscribe to Jennifer Smith's The Jenny Position feed as well. It's a new home of Geek and Sassy, Talk and Pop, Freak Out Driving, Telling Stories, and Journey Through Infinity, and more. On our social media pages, the Greatest Sitcom of All Time tournament's now underway. We're now in round 2. There'll be 4 matchups per day, so make sure to like our tournament page on Facebook or follow us on Twitter so you won't miss a single one. And we've officially kicked off our 2020 stretch project, determining the greatest WCW match ever. All you have to do is research, promote matches, and build your lists. Conversation rules can be found at facebook.com/GWCWmatches or on the Pro Wrestling Only message board. Be sure not to check out Place to Be Nation every day. We have new voices and fresh takes bringing you articles on topics in the worlds of wrestling, sports, and pop culture, including Trent SmackDown on Fox Report, Week in WWE by Jon Crow, Polly's Perspective, Jason's DVD Deep Dive, and Ben's Unpopular Opinion. And don't forget veteran columns like Glenn Butler's weekly walk around their web. If you're doing online shopping at Amazon.com, be sure to click on the Amazon banner on the right side of PlaceToBeNation.com's homepage. Or use PlaceToBeNation.com/Amazon. It takes you right to Amazon and helps us out with no cost to you.